Hello and welcome to Deep North, the official podcast of Iceland Review, Iceland's longest-running English language magazine. Today we'll be sitting down with editor Erik Pomrenki and discussing his article Point of Sale on the cultural history of Iceland's shopping centers. And afterwards we'll be having a brief discussion.
Reykjavik street life is something of an oxymoron, a contradiction in terms. In the winter in particular, locals abandon the main street Laugavegur and its droves of travelers, seeking the comfort of a home during the dark winter days. But even during the shortest days of the season, there are oases in Reykjavik, beacons of light where families and shoppers throng. Places where women's societies collect donations for charities. Where teenagers gather. Where elderly and disabled people go out for an afternoon walk. Where children read in libraries and frolic in foam-covered playpens. Over the decades, shopping centers in Iceland have become more than retail spaces. They are also a common space where life itself unfolds. All of this seems to go against common knowledge. COVID, after all, along with online retailers, was supposed to kill off in-person shopping. But in an era of waning brick-and-mortar retail across Europe and North America, the shopping center seems to be living something of an afterlife in Iceland. Ever the statistical outlier, in Iceland, 63% of all retail trade takes place in shopping centers, by far the greatest share in Europe. Runners-up, such as Estonia at 55% and Norway at 53%, share a similarly cold northern climate. On one level, these shopping centers serve as the public square, the bustling street, in areas where outdoor spaces are frozen and unwelcoming for large parts of the year. But the way in which Icelandic shopping centers have become durably embedded in both culture and daily life suggests, perhaps, a larger story. Urban development began quite late in Iceland, only truly in the 20th century. So we have very little reference in our minds about the layout and character of the traditional Icelandic city, Ásdísarblokk Theodórsdóttir tells me as we sit in her office, which is lined with folio-sized planning documents and maps. Ásdísarblokk is an adjunct lecturer at the University of Iceland, teaching urban planning and geography. Prior to that, she was the director of the National Planning Agency and has worked on urban planning and urban design in Iceland for over three decades. What does the traditional Icelandic city look like, and how does it function? She continues. What do we do in our streets? How do we use our buildings? And how do these two interact? We don't have that reference, really, because Reykjavik and other towns in Iceland only started to take shape in the early 20th century. And when they really began to grow after the Second World War, international planning paradigms with an emphasis on modernism and car-oriented development led the way. The war had brought foreign soldiers, happy to trade and sell their cigarettes and nylons. It had brought infrastructure, including an expanded road network and two airports. The war also brought new investments, with Iceland benefiting from the Marshall Plan, a series of U.S.-backed economic investments to bolster the European economy after the ravages of the Second World War. Within a decade, a generation that had been born in turf houses now had access to all the wonders of modern commercial culture. Key to this post-war commercial explosion was the liberalization of trade policy under the Reform Government, a coalition formed in 1959 between the Independence Party and the Social Democratic Party. Lower tariffs drove a significant increase in the volume and variety of consumer goods imported to Iceland. And throughout the 1960s, liberal trade policy created more and more demand for foreign and specialty goods. During this time, Icelanders also began traveling abroad more often. When they arrived home, they became increasingly discontent with the humble local offerings. So a new breed of specialty shop emerged that was eager to meet the burgeoning demand. In 1960, there were some 2,000 individuals employed in Reykjavik shops. By the end of the decade, that number had increased to 3,000. Another major force for social and urban change during this period was the increasing participation of women in the workforce. It created the market for one-stop shopping and for bulk shopping once a week, instead of going to the corner shop every day, Ástís Hlökk explains. At the beginning of the 1960s, only 20% of married women in Iceland worked outside the home. Most housewives had the time to frequent small neighborhood stores, perhaps stopping by a dairy, a bakery, and a fish store daily to take care of the groceries. By 1975, the portion of married women in the workforce had increased to 50%. This modern woman worked a full-time job and was still expected to take care of dinner, and a new kind of shopping center arose to meet her needs.
Many neighborhood shopping centers in Reykjavik had, and still have, shoe repair shops, the idea being that customers can drop off their shoes while they do their shopping.
Prior to the 1960s, many Reykjavik neighborhoods were served by small clusters of shops. These shops generally offered the basics, such as groceries and perhaps a cobbler. Significantly, they were designed to serve only the local environs. As such, they were often nestled inside neighborhoods, away from arterial roads. The 1960s saw the rise of a new kind of shopping center in Iceland. One which was partially enclosed, offered a greater selection of goods, and served several city districts. As such, it was important for these new centers to be located along arterial roads, so that workers could easily stop by on their way home. Shopping centers such as Norðurver, built in 1965 by Hautun, and Austurver, built in 1967 by Hauleitisbraut, conformed to this new model. However, when Iceland switched from left-hand to right-hand traffic in 1968, many of these new shopping centers found themselves awkwardly positioned. Previously, commuters could make an easy turn into the parking lot, but now, many must make awkward left-hand turns across traffic to access these centers. It's an irony of history that so much important development occurred in Reykjavik on the eve of the switch from left to right. It's also an important lesson, Ástís Hlökk tells me. I remember growing up near Glæsibær shopping center, which also would have been a left-hand turn. And this turn for shoppers returning home is very much a part of retail planning that we still consider today. Although urban planners couldn't have anticipated the change from left-hand to right-hand traffic, it just shows how we have to think about these things from the very beginning. Because just as back then and today, we are designing and planning a neighborhood as a whole. The 1960s also saw a significant expansion in suburban development in Reykjavik, with neighborhoods such as Fossvogur, Aurbær, and Breiðholt all tracing their roots back to this time. Indeed, the expansion was occasionally so rapid that new housing developments often lacked basic services for years. In 1962, one resident near Hauleitisbraut complained to the newspaper Tímin, quote, "In a very short time, a large and densely populated neighborhood has sprung up here. Most of the buildings are apartment buildings, but there is not a single store in the neighborhood. The neighborhood, of course, has all the characteristics of a new development, which has been built in a short time.
but the services that need to follow such a new development have slowed down. What causes the most trouble is the lack of shops. Residents have to get their groceries all the way down on Grensásvegur if they go by foot. Otherwise, you have to take the bus and do your shopping in the Hlíðar neighborhood.
End quote. The new breed of shopping center went hand in hand with a new model of suburban development, and it must have been a great relief to residents of new developments when they finally got their own modern shopping center. By the end of the 1960s, 11 new shopping centers dotted the urban landscape of Reykjavik, offering an unheard-of selection of foods, appliances, clothes, and more.
The first ever department store in Iceland, Kjörbúð Sís, opened in 1955. Located on Austurstræti in downtown Reykjavik, it also had the first automatic door in Iceland. A charming advert from the time read, quote, "The door opens by itself. The doors are of a new make, which has been yet unknown to our countrymen. They simply open up when you approach."
Integral to this new model of residential and commercial development was the private automobile, which, like so many other imported consumer goods, was becoming increasingly accessible to Icelanders. As to whether cars or shopping centers came first, Ástís Hlökk tells me, quote, "It's always a question of the chicken and the egg. Is it that people are driven to car ownership and the urban planners accommodate them? Or is car ownership driving the development of the city?" End quote. No matter the prime mover in this self-reinforcing dynamic, the new style of shopping and urban development grew alongside car ownership. Increasingly, the distance to a store mattered less and less, with selection and parking infrastructure becoming the decisive factor for the modern motorized shopper. As the capital region underwent rapid expansion in the mid-20th century, in came this very impressive planning document known as Aðalskipulag Reykjavíkur 1962-1983, or the Reykjavik City Plan, Ástís Hlökk explains. It was very well written and well thought through, but it worked with a very clear vision of car-dependent suburban development and massive car infrastructure. Indeed, Reykjavik would be a very different city today if the city planners of the 1960s had gotten their way. And as Ástís Hlökk unfurls an impressive map across her desk, a vision of Reykjavik surrounded by an unbroken belt of highways and massive downtown interchanges is revealed. The Reykjavik City Plan made many assumptions that continue to impact city life today. One of these key assumptions is simply what the city should look like. The city described by the plan, Ástís Hlökk goes on, is the spread-out modern city with suburbs, shopping centers, and highways. Another, more fundamental assumption was who the city was for. In short, the assumed Reykjavik resident reflected in the plan could be described as a car-owning, healthy adult. For a long time, we developed our city with this car-dependent approach, with low-density suburbs, big-box retailers, strip malls, and shopping centers located along major arterial roads, outside of residential neighborhoods, Ástís Hlökk says. We've driven the population into a car-oriented lifestyle, and maybe it's not just a lifestyle, maybe it's become a sort of car-dependent ideology. And it's very difficult to turn around. There are so many generations of people that have grown up getting their driver's license on their 17th birthday, and maybe even getting their first car at 17. And then you get into this mindset where it's all about getting places by car, that there needs to be parking for your car, and that you shouldn't have to pay for it. One particularly car-dependent area in Reykjavik is Skeivan, a mass of strip malls, parking lots, and big box retailers east of the city center. It's a really interesting area, Ástís Hlökk continues. It was originally planned for more industrial use, things like workshops, car repair, and so on. But during the 1980s, retail crept along the major roads eastward from the city center, following residential development. So this area didn't really develop as planned. It all happened organically because of the population moving further and further east into the suburbs, rising car ownership, and new models of shopping. Despite the predominance of car culture in Iceland today, it is still a rather recent development. Austi's look identifies the 1980s as the decade in which private automobile reached a critical mass, becoming the default mode of transportation. I don't think there's anything about Iceland's physical environment that requires us to be more car-dependent than other societies, she explains. We've come to this place both consciously and unconsciously, and it's difficult to turn around, but we are starting to see changes.
Another early department store was Kjörgardur, opening in 1957 on Löðaveur. Its claim to fame was the first ever escalator in Iceland. The building it once occupied is now a Bónus grocery store.
In 1987, Iceland saw the opening of its first true North American-style shopping mall, Kringlan. With shops, a food court, and some 40,000 square meters of fully enclosed retail space, it represented an entirely new scale of shopping. Where previous neighborhood shopping centers served their surrounding communities and adjacent districts, Kringlan attracted shoppers from all throughout the capital region and beyond. I actually started my career researching Kringlan, Austi's look tells me. I was writing my bachelor's thesis at the University of Iceland in geography in 1991, studying the impact of Kringlan on the city center. In the years preceding and following the construction of Kringlan, there was a large debate about what kind of effect the shopping center would have on Reykjavik's urban fabric. The area it now occupies had previously been set aside by city planners in the 1960s for a new city center and downtown area. Back then, says Austi's look, this was part of the modern thinking of the Reykjavik city plan, to develop a new modern city center with a shopping mall, library, and theater that would replace the old city center. But by the time Kringlan was built, the design language had changed. Now it was something more like a regional shopping center, and it never became the new city center it was originally planned to be. In a nation with a young tradition of urbanism that is still heavily reliant on car infrastructure, shopping centers in many ways do serve as city centers. Indeed, when Smederland Shopping Mall opened in 2001, on the auspicious date of October 10th at 10:10 a.m. or 10:10:10:01, managing director Pálmi Kristinsson stated to the newspaper Morgunblaðið that it would serve as Iceland's quote downtown. Smederland, located in the largely suburban municipality of Kópavogur, remains Iceland's largest shopping center with some 62,000 square meters of retail space, hosting 4 million visitors annually. There is a certain irony in shopping centers such as Kringlan and Smederland aiming to replace the city center, as they could be said to represent a completely different design philosophy from a traditional downtown area. These shopping centers favor low-density zoning with separate commercial and residential areas, while traditional downtown areas favor high-density housing with mixed-use zoning served by public transport. Like so much in Reykjavik, the tension is relatively new. We're in a period now where we have more and more competing ideas and ideologies about where we want to head, Austi's look explains. We are planning for livable urban environments, improved public transport, and independent local retail. But at the same time, we are still building suburbs further away, alongside more car infrastructure. Many of these new directions are connected to the New Urbanism movement, a school of thought within urban planning and design that places an emphasis on restoring a sense of community and the development of more environmentally friendly cities. I think it's fair to say that in the past, Reykjavik has developed in a direction that could be seen as more North American, but now we're seeing a turn towards a more European design language, Austis Luk tells me. This follows prevailing ideologies in urban planning and design around the world, which have introduced a paradigm shift from the previously dominant school of modernism in planning and design. We Icelanders like to think of ourselves as being at the cutting edge. But in planning terms, what we tend to do is repeat what has already been done elsewhere, with a little time lag. And we don't necessarily learn from others' mistakes. When we built Smouterland in 2001, for example, that type of shopping center was already on its way out abroad. Two upcoming Icelandic development projects that are strongly aligned with the principles of new urban planning and design include the long-delayed Borgarlína, a proposed bus rapid transit system serving the capital region, and Keltur, a new development in the capital region planned with principles of the 15-minute city in mind. The 116-hectare region to the southeast of Grafarvogur is planned to house some 10,000 residents, in addition to providing workplaces for an additional 5,000. Public transport and high-density housing is central to the plan, with residents hopefully being able to commute, shop, and more without having to rely on private cars. Keltur is a really interesting step in the development of Reykjavik, Austis Luk says. We have a unique opportunity there to build a new neighborhood that provides access to good public transport, a good environment for pedestrians and cyclists, and retail spaces that are linked into the urban fabric. It's completely different from what we have primarily been doing since the mid-20th century.
It may come as no surprise that the first shopping centers in North America also originated in colder climates. The Southdale Center in Edina, Minnesota, opened in 1956, was the first fully enclosed shopping center in the world with 120,000 square meters of retail space and climate control.
Shopping centers may well have seen their day, both in Iceland and abroad. But in Iceland, they seem to persist for a variety of reasons. They serve as community centers in a city built for cars, not people. They serve as a bustling street when outside is covered in black ice and frost. And in a Reykjavik that increasingly caters to tourists, shopping centers also form the background of everyday life for local residents. We are of course aware of the many benefits of these places. That's partly why they exist and why they keep being built in one way or another, Austis Luk explains. But now we are in an era where in Iceland, like in other parts of the world, we are not necessarily building many new shopping centers in this fashion anymore. We are instead seeing different types of buildings, neighborhoods, and developments that are trying to create these same benefits, but in different ways. One example are food halls, which have proliferated in recent years. They mimic the atmosphere of a marketplace from warmer climes while serving as an indoor hub for dining and entertainment. And much like Skavon and other urban spaces that developed organically, the shopping centers of Iceland will continue to change, even as their heyday draws to a close. As Austis Luk says, "The most interesting spaces to me are those which people have inhabited and started to use not as originally intended. You might have a new social group that wasn't there when the space was planned, people who weren't necessarily considered in the design. I think our bigger shopping centers, like Kringlan and Smouterland, will be here for a while yet, but this reinvention is already beginning. Every time you see kids and young people gathering at the mall, or just older people taking their daily walk there, you're seeing someone reinventing these places for themselves."
Well, thank you for that, Eric.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for listening.
So why this article and why now?
Yeah, I mean, as I was just telling you when we were chatting earlier, just at a very practical level, as I was kind of thinking about some of these things, it was the holiday season. I was just spending a lot of time in shopping malls on the weekend and stuff. A lot of time on benches while my wife shopped, just kind of staring off into space. You know, so I mean, like, inevitably, like, just the places that my mind goes is, you know, what are these places? Where do they come from? I think it's also fair to say that these places, you know, shopping malls, are on their way out elsewhere. The story is a little bit more complicated on continental Europe, but in North America, you know, I think it's fair to say that online retailers have very much dealt a death blow to these places that were so important to culture up until very recently. And, you know, I mean, for me, it was kind of just a matter of, you know, why are these places so durable in Iceland? I mean, I think at a very practical level, like, yes, I mean, as I kind of mentioned, it is just cold for a lot of the year. And I mean, just at a very basic level, you know, people like having a place to socialize, to walk around in when it's maybe, you know, not so nice to be outside. But, you know, like, as I kind of started just reading into this and like talking with Austis, you know, like, there's just inevitably a lot of, like, there's a much bigger story than just Iceland is cold and people like to be inside.
Yeah, but that's an important point. I mean, so last Sunday, for example, I have two kids who are 3 and 5, and we had sort of planned on going to the Húsdýragarðurinn, the sort of local zoo in Reykjavik. And we were going to meet some other parents there. And then in the morning, they sent us a message saying, you know, it's actually too cold to go. It was 7 below or something. And my kids were obviously very disappointed, but where did we go? We went to Kringlan.
Yeah.
Because there's a, as you mentioned, a foam covered play area downstairs. And they spent about an hour there. And then we went to Ævintýraland, which is, you know, a kind of jungle gym padded with foam as well, where they spent an additional hour. Which is why we went there, because it's warm and it's, I mean, that's one of the downsides of living in Iceland, especially when you have kids, is, you know, you're so dependent on the weather.
Yeah.
And I think there's certain maybe parallels between the shopping malls and the swimming pools. I mean, swimming pools have served as sort of our coffee houses, because it's a place where we seek out heat.
I mean, that was definitely on my mind as I was writing this, you know, how to kind of put this next to the pool somehow, like, in its importance in Icelandic culture. I mean, I think it's fair to say that, you know, I mean, I think in one of your pieces somewhat recently, you know, like, there's this comparison drawn with like the Roman Forum or something. And like, that's essentially the pool in Icelandic culture. And yeah, like, that makes a lot of sense to me. But then, like, that just kind of got me thinking about, you know, what are the other important public spaces in Icelandic life? And I mean, to me, like, the mall really stood out there. You know, I mean, I admit that I am not a huge shopper. I would say that I engage in minimal retail therapy. But yeah, I mean, especially during December, January, February, you know, when there are just a lot of weekends, when there's not really a lot else to do. Yeah, I mean, sometimes my wife and I will just go to Kringlan or Smederland. We don't really need anything. We just kind of hang out for the weekend or something, and, you know, maybe just go to the gym afterwards or something. And that's what you do on a Saturday or a Sunday. And, you know, it's kind of nice.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who grew up in the States, I certainly remember, you know, once I got my driver's license, you know, the thing that you did was go to the mall with your friends. You could do a little shopping. There was a food court and maybe a movie theater. So I think it's interesting, as you noted, I mean, the statistic that you mentioned was that, that Iceland has the highest percentage of retail shopping occurring in shopping malls of all the other European countries?
Yeah. So there's still 63% of all retail, that happens in malls in Iceland. So, you know, the remainder of that would be, you know, basically all online shopping and also all other retail not in shopping centers. So, you know, that's basically two-thirds of all retail transactions still take place in shopping centers, which is, you know, actually quite massive.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. But I wonder how far are we from, I mean, given that the attraction of these spaces has a lot to do with climate, being able to be indoors in a warm environment during deep winter, how far are we from just, you know, putting on our Apple Vision headsets and, you know, entering some kind of augmented virtual reality space from the comforts of our living rooms and doing
well? I mean, it's like I think a really important thing is how, you know, I think there are for a long time going to be real limits to how far online retail can really go in Iceland, because, you know, just logistically, Iceland is at the end of most supply chains. And, you know, so there have been in recent years some kind of movements in this space with kind of like home delivery meal services and, you know, some larger kind of Amazon-like services becoming more available. But I mean, I think that just fundamentally Iceland's geographic position as an island in the North Atlantic will always mean that there's some resistance to, you know, kind of instant online shopping and like the total variety that's maybe available elsewhere. And so I think that, you know, there will always kind of be a place for in-person retail, brick and mortar stores, shopping centers in Iceland in a way that, you know, will be changing a lot elsewhere. But I mean, to me, I at least see that definitely being here to stay in Iceland for the foreseeable future, just because these like very practical ways in which, you know, the realities of Iceland kind of resist online shopping in some ways.
Yeah. And I also really liked that you dug up these various sort of historical advertisements from various newspapers. I mean, we take these things for granted today, but, you know, the first automatic door, the first escalator, these were some pretty big developments in back in the day.
Yes, I would describe some of those as charming. No, but actually one of the most recent things that I, one of the most interesting things that I came across for the piece was this kind of reader submitted letter to the Tímin newspaper in the 60s about this development. And I think it was really interesting, not just because, you know, they were talking about these new developments, but how the reader showed how even then it was still the assumption that you did all your shopping by foot or by bus. And that was very interesting to me, because now I think the situation is very different. And, you know, I mean, of course, you mention how when you were living in the States, you got your driver's license and you'd hang out at the mall. You know, it's like those are very connected things, like car ownership and shopping malls. Like those are two models that kind of go together. And, you know, that was really something that was interesting to me. I mean, urban planning is a little bit of an interest of mine. But, you know, I mean, initially I did just set out trying to write a history of these places. I was just kind of curious, you know, where, like, why did these spaces become so popular? But I mean, very quickly it became clear that in order to talk about those things, I also had to talk about a lot of other things that have to do with urban design, urban planning, public transportation, things like this. And so, you know, I mean, for me, this is just a really interesting kind of topic, because in order to talk about it, you immediately have to kind of explain a lot of other things. And that's always something that I get a lot out of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a sort of systems way of thinking. And I think also, I mean, there could maybe have been a past where someone had the foresight to, you know, begin implementing some kind of more modern bus or train system in Iceland, where we weren't so heavily dependent on the automobile. And now we're seeing that sort of, you know, the fact that no one really had the foresight to do this is sort of, you know, the chickens coming home to roost, because traffic here is really heavy and there seems to be this kind of resistance, especially among the older generation, towards the idea of riding, you know, the bus. And this Porcalina project has been controversial and a long time in the coming.
Very long time. I think that I was recently flipping through some old ice interviews from like 2015 or something, and we were talking about Borcalina then.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's interesting. Do you find one of the great things about writing these longer articles about this or that phenomena is that, you know, you come into a particular topic or subject with a certain, you know, idea of what you're going into, and then maybe after writing it and researching it and speaking to the experts, you emerge with a kind of new picture. So do you think that now, sitting down on the bench in Kringlan waiting for your wife to shop, do you have a new view on the shopping centers, and what has changed, if so?
Maybe I just have two things. Like, one thing was just this kind of fun fact that I discovered about like the left-hand turns that I thought was really interesting. You know, how a lot of these shopping centers were built right before the change in right-of-way in Iceland happened. And that is always something that I've kind of noticed, is like some of these, not the largest shopping centers like Kringlan and Smáralind, but these more kind of neighborhood-based ones. Some of them just have these kind of wonky turns that you have to make across traffic. And I've always just kind of wondered, like for instance, there's this one off of, yeah, Hauleitisbrøyt, I think.
Østervær,
right? Yeah. And we sometimes have to go out there because there's like a an after-hours clinic. And, you know, like if one of us is sick, you know, we might have to just pop over there to get a prescription or something. And, you know, honestly, it's always kind of annoying to go out there because it's just like the layout's just kind of weird. And I've just always thought about that. You know, so that's maybe not something that's like totally been a revelation, but there was just always something I kind of noticed. And then like, once you kind of learn why that's the case, I mean, you know, you really feel some sort of connection to history there. You're like, okay, yeah, like, you know, it's like this because these decisions were made, and like, this was the kind of environment in which those decisions were made, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I mean, maybe just the final thing that I would say, and, you know, this isn't maybe, you know, something that just totally changed my worldview or something, but something that I just noticed and started kind of looking at the city a little bit different. So where the grocery store Bonus on Laugavegur currently is, this was one of Iceland's first department stores, Kjörgarður. And, you know, I never noticed this before in my entire time in living in Reykjavik. But when I was just walking down Laugavegur recently, I just looked at the ground in front of Bonus there. And there's just kind of like a beautiful Art Nouveau style kind of like mosaic that says Kjörgarður. And I just never noticed that. I just, you know, walked by there in my daily life with just my blinders on, just, you know, walking as fast as possible to and from a bus or something. And I'd really just never looked at my daily environment. And, you know, so like I kind of noticed that, and I just started looking a little bit more at storefronts and stuff, and, you know, how there are all of these like beautiful old buildings in Reykjavik that, you know, will often have, you know, an old title or name of what that building used to be. I mean, for instance, there's a little tour shop on Laugavegur, but like their step still has this very ornate and kind of beautiful visir tile, which is where like an old newspaper office used to be. So yeah, you know, I mean, again, that's not maybe something that totally changed how I think in writing this, but it definitely just kind of made me notice things more. And that's always really, really cool, I think.
Yeah, I had a similar experience when I wrote about the history of Laugavegur. Walking it these days, you know, I always think of sort of these laborers who helped lay Laugavegur, which was done at the initiative of the city in order to provide some, you know, a job for these people who were unemployed. Mm. And then you have this first fatal car accident occurring on the corner of Laugavegur and Ingólfsstræti, I believe, where, you know, someone who had basically, this was in the 20s, someone who had recently taken a driver's license, or I'm not sure, maybe there wasn't, it was one course that this person took before operating the car, and then he sped down and took a really sharp turn and ran over this older woman. And yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things and privileges of being a writer and being able to research and think about these topics, is it really does serve to enrich your daily life and daily environment. So, thank you for sharing the piece. It was edifying.
Certainly. Thank you. Deep North is the official podcast of Iceland Review, the oldest continuously running English language publication in Iceland, covering community, nature, and culture. If you enjoyed listening, please consider subscribing to Iceland Review at our website.